This programme was previously broadcast live on Love Sport Radio, so some items may be out of date. For more podcasts or to listen live, visit lovesportradio.com.
Listen, we've been putting it out there to you today, 0208 70 20 558. Please let us know, what is your maddest superstitions? We've had some mad ones, okay? I've told you about the one that my mum had.
Yes.
When you come back, if you've gone out and you've forgotten something, you come back, you have to spit on the floor.
Yeah.
Okay? If anybody else has heard that, whether it was my mum winding me up all those years ago, just thinking, he's an idiot.
Yeah. Right? All those years ago.
We had Dave call in about opening the umbrella.
Which is a big one. I mean, I don't do that purely because what's the point?
It's not raining, is it?
It's not raining. I don't want to open the umbrella.
No, there's no point.
But walking under a ladder, well, you know, if there's a ladder there.
That's obvious.
I don't think I'd walk under it anyway.
In fact, if you walk under the ladder, is that the reason probably for that is that something's likely to drop on your head.
Yeah.
The fella's up there.
The fella's up there.
He's painting or something.
He's painting. You can get some paint on your head.
Yeah, exactly. Listen, John, this is close to my heart,
yes.
As you know, right?
Yeah, of course.
The kids are emptying our bank accounts by playing FIFA, okay? Now, my 10-year-old son, Cash, which is quite strange, his name's Cash.
Yeah.
He keeps getting rid of
cash. He loves spending cash.
He has to. We have to buy these tokens, and we have to buy the draft.
See, this disgusting.
Right. So the draft of the players, right? Okay, and then he will sort of say, "Dad, can I have this? And can I have £4?" But by the, I figured it out. I told you, 1 month, he'd done £95.
Yeah, that's incredible.
Right, and I didn't really know. I get the email, but I just see PlayStation. Didn't. It's only until I checked it. £95.
I can remember playing PlayStation a few years ago, quite a few years ago, and I used to get the game, play the game, and that was it.
Yeah.
And now, it's not it, is it?
Not anymore, because, draft of players, and you can buy a player. I mean, it's real. It's almost real. Some kids are spending £550 of their parents' money. We're joined now by Chris Green, Love Sports technology expert. Chris, how can I stop my son doing this?
Well, the important thing is you need to turn on the parental controls. All of these console and PC streaming gaming services all have an option for you to turn on control so that you can limit, oversee, and approve your kid's spending if you've put your credit card on their account. The same also applies with mobile phones and the gaming services on those. So it's absolutely essential that you turn these on because it's just so easy when you're in one of these games to just go, oh, I need a power-up.
So I take it,
I need some more guns, buy that.
I take it, Chris, that, Bell, you don't put the parental control
on. No, I tell you what, I do, right? And what happens is when the kid eventually says, oh, Dad, it's the new draft, can I have, you know, 15 quid to go and blah, 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 you lift it, okay. And for some reason,
you don't put it back.
It's a bit of a strange one. But in that short period of time when he's done the 15 quid, there's other bits and pieces that go onto it because there's this sort of upgrade membership that you pay for 3 months, and then once you've ticked that, every 3 months it's coming off your account. It's a bit like when you have that Amazon Prime. If you don't sign up for Amazon Prime, but something happens and you get it delivered, you're still paying about 70-odd quid. And you have to phone them up and say, I didn't want Amazon Prime.
All that's on that one.
It's a bit of a strange one, isn't it, Chris?
Yes and no. I mean, it's probably not like for like with saying Amazon Prime, but what we are seeing is that all of these subscription services, so the bolt-ons for your Xboxes, your PlayStations, your Nintendo Switch, as well as the PC stuff like Steam and mobile services on Android and iOS. The way that people are playing and consuming games has changed. It used to be you bought your game, you played your game, and you got sick of it.
Yeah.
Now, you buy your game and you can constantly add to it and improve it. Mm. But it means that sort of having already shelled out, easily ending up to 50 quid for a game, you can be paying hundreds more in add-ons and additional packs and skins and all these other sort of digital assets you can buy.
Well, disgusting.
And because it's so simple, it's like a single click to buy it.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't necessarily quantify what you've just spent.
Agreed.
You've clicked a button and suddenly you've got a bigger weapon to use in your game.
Yeah.
But you don't realise that weapon just cost you £20.
Mm. Oh, yeah. I don't get, son, I don't get the money it's worth.
Okay.
Just to buy a new weapon.
Okay.
Or a new player. It's all virtual. It's not even real.
I know, but they're 10 years of age,
it's
right?
Madness.
They don't live in the real world, do they?
Yeah, okay? But it's madness.
They don't
though.
Have to come in here and sit for 4 hours
there's
with
nothing,
you.
There's nothing even you can touch or
no.
That's tangible.
However.
It's all like. It's
however,
just ridiculous.
If we're talking about FIFA. It relates to real players, okay? So
yeah.
They're not, okay? So in the end, what my son is thinking, if he can buy Ronaldo for West Ham, right, his team's going to be unbelievable and he's going to be able to beat all his mates.
Yeah.
And he thinks, I can buy Ronaldo and he can come and play for West Ham. And Ronaldo costs about 60 quid or something like that. And in his head,
it's ridiculous.
It's real.
Yeah,
it's true, isn't
yeah,
it, Chris?
Yeah, of course.
Well, that's right, yeah. I mean, it is... done sort of in real life, you know, it makes you feel like, yeah, you've just bought Ronaldo and put him into your local team, or it's like, you know, Ronaldo moves to Juventus, so you've got to now buy the new Ronaldo with the Juventus shirt on,
yes,
and things like that. You know, these are sold as almost like real world assets. You see it in other things, well, like the wrestling games. You know, you'll get add-ons so you can buy, you know, the latest new wrestler, or you can buy the bad guy version of the wrestler when they turned heel and that kind of thing.
Huh.
I mean, what about, because we sort of used to have it with, what's the fighting game? It's just gone out of my head. That the kids were all going mad about, where you land on the island and then you have, there's about 100 players. What's the game called?
I've no idea.
Fortnite.
Fortnite, right. Yeah.
Do you know the reason why? My life was taken over by Fortnite for a year. Okay, and I thought I'm never going to get my son off of it. And we spent a fortune on that. Like you just mentioned skins, so that the character can have a different outfit, can't he? Or he can be a different character, if you like. And those skins were so expensive that what he would be saying is that, oh, my friend so-and-so's got that skin, he's got that. And that's what they play on, don't they?
That's right. You know, it's about having, you know, that unique personalised aspect. It's not just good enough getting the game and playing the game. No, you've got to stand out amongst the crowd now. It's got to be bespoke.
Yeah.
And that's what they're playing up to. And for the games companies, this has now created an incredible new source of revenue for them that they didn't have previously. I mean, to show my age a little bit, I mean, the games players say they don't know the pain that we suffered back in the 80s and 90s,
yeah,
having to sit there for half an hour loading a game in off of a tape.
Yes,
onto an old, like, Commodore 64 or Speccy.
Yeah.
And after you've done that, you weren't worried about buying anything else. You just wanted to finally get on and play the game.
Yeah.
But now, you know, everything's instantaneous, which means there's this greater demand for instant gratification,
yeah,
which these in-game purchases absolutely sort of fulfill.
Mm. Yeah, no, I mean, the one a few years ago was Minecraft, wasn't it?
That's right.
So every, you know, even my daughter's a bit older now, but she not only did she play Minecraft, and then we bought various bits and pieces that she could upgrade to. She then went on the tour to see Dan Middleton, who is a guy that actually sits on YouTube, sits in the corner of your screen, John. Mm-hmm. You're going to love this. And he commentates while he plays...
I've seen them.
And the amount of money that this guy is generating is incredible, isn't it, Chris?
Yeah.
That's right. There's so many of these guys, you know, Dan Middleton, PewDiePie, people like that. I mean, they've become multi-millionaires just off of these videos where they're just sitting there, you know, critiquing their own and other people's play.
Yeah. I know, yeah, I've seen them, yeah, it's incredible.
It's crazy. Strangely enough, I met that Dan Middleton. He's just bought a house.
Yeah.
I'll just give you half a clue. Mm. He's about 28 years of age, right?
Yeah.
He's just bought a house off of a developer that I know for $5.5 million.
Wow.
Right?
It's
28.
In cash.
I don't think he's got a mortgage, right? 28 years of age, $5.5 million. And all he does is go on YouTube and he critiques the game.
The game.
And
the
kids watch him.
Yeah.
It's incredible.
That is incredible, yeah. But this story, though, is terrible, isn't it? Where four children spent nearly 550 quid in 3 weeks... buying players' packs to play. The children's father, Thomas Carter, had bought them a single pack for around 8 quid and had not realised they had seen how he made the purchase. The Switch has now been confiscated, identifiably, Mr. Carter said. Nintendo's agreed to a full refund. I mean, it's a terrible story.
That's hard to get the refund, though, isn't it, Chris?
No, he's got the refund.
It's surprising he got the refund because, you know, technically... Nintendo did nothing wrong on this occasion. You know, the onus really did sit with the parent, which is why, you know, the practical advice that I would give you today is you've got to make sure you turn on those parental spending controls.
Yeah.
Absolutely paramount. And, you know, in this case, that hadn't happened. And it made it far too easy for the kids to be able to replicate the purchases. And, you know, next thing you know, they've cleaned him out. But you turn on those controls, it means that your kids can't run roughshod with your credit card. And more importantly, you get a real-time view of what they're trying to spend.
Is it on there?
Either just block it outright, or you can actually approve it transaction by transaction.
Have you got it on there, Bell? Is it on there? Is there a parental guide on?
The strange thing is, we started to teach him a lesson because what was happening was that he would spend a bit more than we told him he could spend.
Yeah.
And so we sort of told him a lesson. Eventually, I told him that I was getting a new card come through. And then after about 2 weeks, he kept saying, "Dad, is your new card coming through? Is your new card?" And to the point where he actually got bored of asking. And now he just plays the game.
Right.
Okay. And so I think it is a bit of pressure from other kids, isn't it? It's your peer pressure.
Oh, of course it is.
And they say, "Well, I've got that one. I want that one." Blah blah blah. And then,
and you know what else? It must be shocking, really, wouldn't you, with the class thing, as in, you know, some parents, of course, have got more money than others,
without a doubt.
And they'll come in, and the kids will go, "I've got this one. You haven't.
Exactly.
You haven't," and all that.
It's true.
You know, as I told you the story about my ex friend of ours, who said to his kid when he was playing football, and then the kid said, "Oh, Dad, they're making fun of me," and he said, "Don't worry. You tell them you're going up to they're going up to their horrible house in Dagenham, and you're going up to your lovely house in Chigwell." Shocking.
I mean, Chris, that's a whole new game, isn't it?
That's terrible.
That's taking it to a new level.
It certainly does.
Chris, just before you go, where are we going with this? How big can this get? I mean, you know, the whole online thing now, like you say, you don't just buy the game and you play it. It's just getting bigger and bigger, and there's more money being spent online, isn't there?
Well, that's right, and it's likely to change further because the next change that we're starting to see is you're going to stop buying games and you're going to start subscribing to services, a bit like you do with your Netflix and your Amazon.
Yeah.
Right.
So you're going to be, you know, continuously paying out either on a pay-for-play basis, and there's going to be even more options for, you know, in-game spending, in-game power-ups, in-game extra services, membership fees that you need to shell out for. Yeah, it's all going to pile up. So this is why ultimately it's important you keep those controls in place.
Do you know what?
God help us.
This is sort of heading to a bit like the stuff we did on the William Hill betting shops last week, closing 700 shops because they reduced the gambling from £100 to £2. And to be fair, I think this does need curbing, doesn't it?
It does. Let me tell you something, Chris. I would be the world's worst because I love computer games. You don't.
I don't know.
You're not particularly, but I love FIFA and I love the other one.
You'd be carried away with
this. I would absolutely, and I know, and I'm quite proud of myself. Mm. I got rid of my PlayStation a few years ago, and reluctantly, I must tell you, because I was playing FIFA and it was taking up hours and hours of my day, and every second I must go and play that. Oh, am I going to win that? And no, I won't. Won't do it.
Then you took up the real game. You're now a semi-pro footballer, aren't you?
Yeah.
Chris, thanks ever so much. Really enjoyed that chat.
Chris Green. Thank you, Chris. Cheers, mate.
Chris Green, love sports technology expert. Mm. Yeah, listen, what happened to the old days of Space Invaders, eh?
Eh?
It was nice and easy then. And what was the other one? Galaxians, and there was one other one.
I think there was Pac-Man.
Yeah, but there was that. What was that one with the triangle in the middle that spun round and it used to shoot all the sort of the stars and the shapes?
Oh,
what was that called?
I can't remember.
Oh, all right, okay, just going to run with Space Invaders.
But I'll tell you one thing. I like Monopoly.
For the fans, by the fans. Love Sport Radio.
Listen, John, when was the last time you done a wheelie on a bike?
Pardon?
A wheelie.
I thought you said a wee-wee.
No, a wheelie.
I've never done a wee-wee on a bike.
No, I bet you have. But when have you done a wheelie?
Never done a wheelie, no. Okay. I never chanced it.
Kids are right into wheelies at the moment.
Are they, okay? Really?
But the person that's not into wheelies was Chris Froome. Obviously, he had the worst crash you've ever seen.
Oh, my goodness.
Smashed into a wall.
Oh, and he broke his...
He broke his femur.
I mean, that femur bone, that's hard
to
break.
That's a tough one to break.
Isn't it? Well, it's Tour de France at the moment.
But Geraint Thomas is really the big hopeful, and we are now joined by Daniel Lloyd, cycling journalist. Mm. How's it started, Daniel?
Good. We've had loads of wee-wees and wheelies so far.
That's what we like to hear.
There we are, you see.
Yeah, nobody does any wheelies anymore. It's
I've done a few wee-wees on the bike, but not wheelies.
As Garant
you
Thomas...
You just said you hadn't.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, he's a liar. As Garant Thomas started?
Okay. He started okay. So Team Ineos in the team time trial came second, so that was a good result for them because they put time into most of Garant's general classification rivals. But yesterday was a tough stage and it finished on a very slight uphill. And he just got gapped ever so slightly by the man in front of him. It happened to be his Colombian teammate, Egan Bernal.
Wow.
And how it works on those finishes is that you're all given the same time as long as there's not a one-second gap between two consecutive riders. But Geraint had left enough of a gap that it was slightly more than a second. And so what that meant, slightly confusingly, is that he had a five-second gap to some of his key rivals because the clock stops when the first person from a group crosses the line.
Right.
And then when you have that one-second gap a little bit later... If there is that second gap there, it then stops again the next time that person with a gap crosses the line. I probably haven't explained that very well, but it meant he had a five-second gap as opposed to a one.
I know what you mean, but so in normal people's heads...
Can I try again?
Yeah, no, how far... Get on your bike. How far behind the leader is he in seconds?
That's a very good question, actually. I haven't really done my homework before
okay,
I came
don't
on.
Worry,
but
don't
the key thing is that he's 5 seconds behind his teammate and one of the other GC riders. Mm. There's one sort of outsider that's probably more like 20 seconds ahead of him at the moment. But it's all still to play for. By the end of this race, it's going to be minutes rather than seconds we're talking about. So it's nothing too much to worry about. But it's more of that sort of psychological blow that he couldn't quite keep up. But if I try to explain it again, so today's stage, for example,
we've got 3 hours.
We'll probably finish in a sprint.
Right.
So the clock will stop when the first rider crosses the finish line and they'll be doing about 40 miles an hour. Everybody that's in that same group, as long as it's not that 1 second gap, will have the same time. So there could be someone that's 80th position that actually crosses the line 10 seconds after the winner,
yeah.
But they're given the same time because there's no 1 second gap between anybody in front of them. However, if there is then a gap, then it's 12 seconds behind the winner, if that makes any sense, even though there's only 1 second between two consecutive riders.
Yeah. No, none the wiser. Can I try
a third time?
So the current leader is not really favourite to win. I mean, are you going to see another rider slowly emerge as like the tour unfolds?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, the guy that's in the lead is currently the best ranked rider in the world. But the confusing thing, well, one of the other confusing things about cycling is that you basically have sort of Mo Farah and Usain Bolt in the same sort of race. So there's different stages that fit different people. So the guy that's leading at the moment overall in the yellow jersey, I wouldn't say he's a jack of all trades because he's obviously blooming good at a lot of things, but he's not quite as good as the best climbers in the world. So he's likely to be found out when they get to the high mountains. But yeah, he's a blooming good rider. He'll be in the yellow jersey for a while.
That's a strange thing, is it? It's I've got one of our best mates. He's so into his cycling and he sort of bores the pants off of us with some of his stuff. But some of the technicalities of it. But that is.
Do I remind you of him?
No. Because
no.
It's better the way that you're explaining it because I really don't understand now. No, because what I'm trying to say is, like you just said, he's got the yellow jersey at the moment and he's an unbelievable rider. But does the Tour de France then fancy more hill climbers or sprinters?
Well, for the overall classification, it's only ever going to be someone that can climb really fast up mountains. So it used to really frustrate Mark Cavendish when journalists that don't know too much about the sport said, well, if you can win 6 stages in one race, why can't you win the overall?
Exactly,
yeah.
And he almost wouldn't even reply. But yeah, you've got to be able to get over the mountains because it's the cumulative time over the course of the 3 weeks. It's all just added up. And then the person that's taken the shortest amount of time at the end of the 3 weeks is the winner.
Sure.
The sprinters lose up to an hour on the mountain days and they just try and hold on, get inside the time limit, which is set each day so that they can start again the next day and then hold on so that they can have another go at a sprint.
And just asking about that, Daniel, what is the difference... Is it to do with leg muscle? So the hill climbers really sort of got an advantage over the sprinters, if you're saying, because the sprinters will lose an hour on the whole course. What is it? Is it leg power? Is it just general stamina?
It's just physiology, basically. It's the ability to put power out for a long period of time. So it's the same as Mo Farah would get beaten by quite a way by Usain Bolt in a sprint, but it wouldn't be long before Mo would get rid of Usain Bolt when it carried on much longer. It's just the difference in physiology and fast and slow twitch muscle fibers. It's not quite as extreme as that, because the fastest sprinters in cycling are the ones that are on the track, the really big guys like Chris Hoy, but they're so specialist that they wouldn't even get to the end of a Tour de France sprint stage to try it in the first place. So it's not quite as extreme as Bolt and Farah, but it's that kind of thing.
And nobody does any wheelies.
There are. There's a guy called Peter Sagan who's been 3-time world champion who is famed for his bike handling and wheelies. Not in the middle of a stage, but either side.
And listen, lastly, do the riders get to drink the champagne?
Well, less so, I would say. It's getting more and more professional, and there's less and less alcohol going in the evenings, unfortunately. So I'm glad I'm retired.
What a shame.
Just going on that, sort of, I hear some of the maddest things, because it is such a strenuous event to take on. Mm. How do they sort of look after themselves in a way? Obviously, we had let's say the drugs sort of scandal and stuff, and some of the blood transfusions and all these sort of situations. But is it purely just physical workouts? Is it just pure training? And how do they look after themselves now? Is it down to a fine line?
We have got 3 hours, blimey.
We have got 3 hours, so you can...
The reason why I say it is because if I look at professional footballers and I look at tennis players and boxers and whatever you, the cycling seems to be the most strenuous, because it's such a long event. They have to be so finely tuned physically that I just wonder what their regime is in short.
From the very start, obviously just a really, really healthy breakfast, normally eating about 2 to 3 hours before the stage starts, making sure that you've got your fluids. They'll weigh each of them every morning to make sure that they're not losing any weight, because that's normally a sign that you're getting dehydrated from one day to the next.
You need a lot of carbs, don't you, surely?
Yeah, I think they normally consume sort of 6,000 to 7,000 calories a day, because that's roughly what they're burning each day as well. So, yeah, food is sort of top priority, and making sure you get it as soon as possible after the stage as well to replenish what you've lost. But not too much. Like I'd say that's the biggest difference now, is that they really can calculate it down to the finest detail. Whereas I actually did a 3-week race where I put on 3 kilos in the first 2 weeks.
Did you really?
I was so concerned about, not having enough energy, and it was the first time I'd ever done one, and I wanted to get through it. Well, I actually just overate and overdrank.
Yeah.
They'll constantly go to nutritionists.
Was your tyres a bit flat?
Yeah. I have another 10 PSI in it now, please?
Yeah, I mean, do you know what? It is fascinating, because just to sort of see what they go through. And my mate sort of says, you don't realise what you've played football, and you don't realise what we have to go through. He goes on some of these cycling things in New York and stuff. And it does...
He's super fit.
Yeah,
Brad's
super fit. But, I mean, it does take a lot out of your body, doesn't it?
It does, yeah. But you do get used to it. And, I know Lee Dixon is well into his cycling at the moment. I've done a couple of rides with him. He's good mates with my boss, actually. And actually, Matt Prior, the ex-England wiki-keeper, he's currently riding the Tour de France 1 day ahead of the race, but he's doing the entire route.
Right.
Yeah, Danny, he obviously had massive troubles with his Achilles at the end of his career, but he's currently out riding a bike for 100 miles each day.
I can imagine it's something you get addicted to.
Yeah, I think it is, yeah.
You do? I've completely lost that addiction now.
Oh, really?
I can't think of anything worse. Yeah, I did it. I did it because I wanted to compete, and I'm never going to be what I was. So I'm not really. I love watching it, and I love talking about it.
Yeah.
I can take it or leave it. Actually doing it, because I don't really miss the pain.
And now you can eat what you want and drink what you want.
I was going to say, it's a lot more fun going down the pub, isn't it?
Anyone out there that knows it will know exactly that. I do like going down the pub. I do need to throttle back slightly and get back on the bike.
Daniel, been brilliant talking to you.
Thanks,
and
Daniel.
No doubt we will talk to you again as we go through the Tour de France. Daniel Lloyd there, cycling journalist.
Yeah. Nice fella.
Do you know what, though? This wheelie thing is pretty big at the moment, and I'll tell you the reason why.
Yeah.
So where we at Love Sport headquarters here at Southwark Bridge,
yes,
you see a lot of kids in groups of like about 7 or 8 of them on these sort of...
There's a lot of cyclists around here.
Sort of like mountain bikes.
They nearly knock me over.
They nearly knock you over there. But they go down the road pulling these wheelies,
yeah,
and they can go forever pulling wheelies.
Yeah.
And it's just suddenly, it's become very big on Instagram.
Is it?
With young kids. They're yeah. pulling wheelies. And my son's been trying it last week.
What's
in the garden. With his... No, he's useless.
From Ali to Zaha, we've got it covered. Love Sport Radio.
Been asking you, what's your maddest superstition? We've had a few callers, we've had a few messages. 0208 7020 558. Send us a WhatsApp on that number. And or give us a call. Have a little chat with us. Just tell us, what's your maddest superstitions? I've already told you some of mine.
Yeah, you have. Yeah. I've got one.
By the way, I just wanted to say, earlier on, we had Dave on, and he said that he would go past a certain... It was the first love of his life.
Yeah.
And he would go past a certain building, and he would say something to the building.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
Now, I do something every night.
Go on.
Okay.
Can you tell this?
I can tell it, yeah. I do say it every night. On news at 10. So at news at 10.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, right at the very end.
Does it still go...
Do you not watch it?
No.
Really?
No.
I watch news at 10 every night.
No, I haven't seen it for years.
My dad always used to say, afterwards, as soon as, like, whoever it was, the news reader was on at the time...
You did answer my question.
Well, it still does that, it still does that.
Right, okay.
But it's a sort of modernish thing.
Oh, they've modernised it. I don't like that.
At the end of it, he always says, well, there you go. Mm. And on the day that so-and-so, and it's normally Bradbury. He was sort of, Tom Bradbury, who's very good news.
I haven't seen it since Reginald Bozell kit.
Yeah, I'm sure you haven't. And Tom Bradbury always says, and it's good night. Mm. Good night. Mm. And my dad always used to say... Good night, me old mate.
Oh,
right, it doesn't matter who's reading the news, okay?
You do it.
Even if it's a woman.
You do it.
He just says, he used to say, good night, me old mate. And I find myself doing it.
Do you? Right? Out loud?
Out loud.
Yeah.
And my son did say to me, Dad, why'd you do that? And I said, because my dad did it. I said, and I want you to do it when I'm not a man.
Oh, right? Yeah, it's nice.
It's just something that, I don't think it's a superstition, but I make sure that I do it. And it's a funny, we're talking about superstitions.
Yeah.
And I think I said to you a little while back, obviously, you've still got your mum, but we've lost parents and stuff.
Yes, you lost your dad. Yeah, I lost my dad,
Is there anything that... I'll put this out there as well, that your mum and dad left you with. It's a little thing that you go to do something...
There is.
And it always reminds you of something...
I've got something.
Go on.
My dad left me absolutely with this one. Thank you, my friend.
Yes, you do that.
Yeah, that's my dad.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very well, my friend. How are you, my friend?
You say my friend, yeah.
My friend.
You do?
Yeah. Yes, my dad, yeah.
Wow.
My also...
Do you find yourself, when you say it, do you find yourself...
Yeah, remember, thinking of my dad.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's funny, isn't it?
Okay, so I'll give you another one, my dad left me. And it's strange. I bet you think, really, is that all I left you?
Yeah.
Okay, but at night, when me and you get in late from gigs...
Yes.
Say we've been travelling here, then, everywhere, get home, let's say 2 o'clock in the morning, always make myself a cup of drinking chocolate.
To warm
me throat if we've been singing all night.
Yes.
And my dad used to do this thing. He'd make the drinking chocolate, right? And he'd put the drinking chocolate in first, then pour the water in, and then stir it, okay? Without putting the milk in yet.
Yeah.
He'd stir it, okay?
Yeah.
And then pour the milk in, then stir it again.
Right.
And he taught me that.
He taught you that.
Right? He said, I'm going to show you how to make it. Because I used to say, I'm not making it myself, Dad. You make it best. And he taught me that. Every night I do that.
Wow.
I think of my dad.
You think your dad? Isn't that lovely, though?
Just mad, isn't
it? It's lovely. We're going to be talking all things Man United now. We're going to go over to Mark Flanagan. He's on the phone. Hello, Mark. How are you?
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good afternoon, evening.
Good afternoon. Have you got any superstitions, Mark?
I did go through a bit of a period of not watching my football team because every time I did, they didn't win, so I would just refuse to watch them.
Oh, I see. Right. And if you didn't watch, what happened when you didn't watch them? They won.
They kept winning, yeah. So that got that really got stuck in my head, and I had to carry it on, yeah.
That of course is Man United. What about now?
Who said it was Man United? Ah. I'm not giving anything away.
Mark, who is it? Who is it?
I can't tell you that.
You're a Man United journalist, though.
But just why that doesn't make me a Man United fan.
Okay, fair enough.
All right,
fair
okay.
enough. Yeah. All right. Yeah, keeping my cards close to my chest.
All you right. certainly are.
It's a fair shout. Mark, just talk to us about Pogba. Is this, because I'm thinking superstitiously, I think this fella needs to go.
Oh, he definitely needs to go. This is officially a saga, isn't it? Mm. We've got to that point. There's a number of issues. Obviously, a deal of this size becomes quite complicated when a team trying to buy him, Real Madrid, don't actually have 125 million. Mm. And the team who are selling him are quite happy to sell him. I think now the relationship is such that even, you know, Ed Woodward, who knows enough, who's a smart enough guy, realises that the relationship has broken down when the agent has twice gone on record to say that, you know, his player is not behaving in a bad way, and then he's doing the right thing, and he's saying he wants to leave isn't unprofessional, which we all know it is unprofessional. Yeah. So the relationship has broken down to that level. It's just now a question of the two clubs meeting each other's kind of demands. The problem for United is that obviously Real Madrid don't have the cash, which is what United would ideally want, which then brings in people like Isco and Bale into a Pogba plus Isco plus, you know, 70 million.
I would do that deal all day long, wouldn't you?
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, yeah, I think it's a great deal. I mean, I know Isco's stock has fallen because he was either substituted or came on as a sub at the back end of last season, but last season Real Madrid were very dysfunctional, didn't know the best team, and, you know, 2 years ago you'd have said you'd have got Isco and 75 million for Pogba, you'd have snapped his hand off because he was one of the stars of the World Cup. He looked an absolute, you know, top class, world class player. He's just had a bad 6 months. The problem for United is trying to get Isco to come to United, which is a whole different matter, and if Isco doesn't want to come, it's very difficult. Likewise with Bale.
Yes.
His wages are a big problem. It has been reported that United are willing to pay him $450,000 a week.
It's not bad, is it?
For Bell.
Well,
for Bell,
yeah. They've got into, you know,
wow. But,
it's all right.
But it's not bad, is it? But listen, go on.
Yeah, I was going to say the last time they offered £450,000 a week to a player who was coming up for 30, it hasn't gone very well in terms of Mr. Sanchez. And I think that, you know, if you sort of take a step back in terms of the broader picture for United, United's five biggest earners are Sanchez, Lukaku, Pogba, De Gea and Martial. And all of those players have a huge question mark hanging over them in this sort of different way.
Agreed.
Yeah.
And it's become, United have become very dysfunctional in terms of a smooth running club. They're kind of, you know, they're fast becoming the Donald Trump of
do the players want him to
football.
Go?
Well,
do the players want Pogba to go as much as the fans do?
Well, that's a very difficult question because I'm not in a position where I've been able to have an honest one-on-one conversation with players who for very different reasons would be very unwilling to kind of go on the record and talk about other teammates. But I think it's obvious from, you know, there's been a little spat with Jesse Lingard and Pogba. I think the fact that there will be a number of United players who are very unhappy that Pogba has spoken so openly about his desire to leave. That will obviously upset. That goes against the grain in terms of what United stand for, what United are about, the size of the club and being disrespectful. So he will be. I don't think he's got particularly many friends. I mean, Lukaku is his big buddy, and he's obviously looks like he's going to leave as well.
I mean, listen, if Alex Ferguson was managing this team still, he would have gone a long while ago, because as soon as he sort of expresses his allegiance somewhere else that he wants to leave, Alex Ferguson would say, well, "That's it, ta-da."
Yeah,
if you don't go, I'm going to play you in the reserves.
Yeah. And Ferguson sold better players for less.
Oh God!
Than Pogba, you know, from compared to, you know, take it back to what Beckham and Yap Stam and.
Oh, do you know what I was just going to say about Yap Stam? Yeah. I mean, I think we spoke before, Mark, when a few weeks back I went up to watch the 20 years of the Bayern Munich, the Man United team's playing the Bayern Munich team. Yep, Stam still looked great, by the way, a few weeks ago.
Yeah, he did.
He would do a job.
One of my favourites, Yep
Stam. Would do a job for Man United
I
now.
Love Yep Stam.
But the fact is that Alex Ferguson got rid of him because of one little comment or something he'd done.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
It's like, you're out the door because you're not part of this setup. And he would have got rid of Pogba long
while ago.
Because
he's not a team player, is he?
To be fair to Yep Stam, is Ferguson has admitted that's his biggest regret.
I bet.
In 25 years at United, that he sold Stam. There was also something else going in the background, which I can't really talk about. which might get us into trouble, which may have been a factor in that.
Yes.
But
Do remember that. Yes.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. That's, it's a slightly dodgy ground. But, you know, absolutely. It's got so popperish in terms of what Pogba and his agent are saying. And part of the reason Ferguson had an issue with Pogba was because of the agent as well. That's you know, he wanted to stamp his authority on the agent. He, Ferguson, knew that Raiola was going to be a problem and didn't want Raiola players at United as well. So there was that dynamic. But the United are in a position now where, you know, Ferguson was speaking from incredible strength. United are talking from a position of weakness. And all the other clubs know about the weakness of United and the deterioration. And if I were, you know, if I was a United fan, and I'm not saying I am or I'm not.
Yeah, we thought you were.
Come on, Mark.
They're looking over their shoulder at Leicester and Everton and Wolves.
Yes.
The United fans who know what they're talking about and who I speak to, they're not thinking about top four. They're thinking about, are we going to be able to stop them, these, you know, the clubs like that?
Creeping up on you.
And it's a vicious circle for United.
What's the situation with Maguire?
Well, there hasn't been very much change in terms of Maguire at the moment. The interesting sort of developments are actually in midfield, where Mario Lemina has told Southampton he wants to leave. And apparently the story is that he told them when he became aware of interest from Manchester United, who's the guy from Gabon who Southampton brought from Juventus. So obviously, they're still interested in Longstaff at Newcastle, but he's only played 8 games in the Premier League, and Newcastle are asking for $50 million, although United apparently are prepared to go to $30 million. So I suspect that now that Tielemans has gone to Leicester, so they've missed out on him, United are working furiously hard to arrange central midfielders when they sell Pogba. And I think if they can get 2 or 3 in, but are United fans going to be happy with Lamina, Longstaff, and possibly Fernandes, and with Pogba and going the other way?
Not huge names, are they, really?
Well, Lamina's a talented boy. I mean, he played the first half of last season, missed most of the second half with injury problems. You know, he's well thought of if he can stay fit. But, you know, this is where United are. They are having to take considerable risks with unproven players. Daniel James, Wan-Bissaka, you know, who are obviously talented, but have got a long way to go to prove that they're sort of the level that United want, really.
Just before you go, Mark, Sanchez, obviously on massive money, he's got to go, hasn't he? Any news on him leaving?
Nothing at all.
Really? Wow.
No. Well, who's going to take him for $400,000 a week?
Yeah. Crazy.
I mean, the good news for United is he had a good sort of Copa America. And, you know, his agents will be pointing to the fact that he never got a fair run in the United first team, which is actually a fair comment. You know, that he never got a run of 10, sort of 15, 20 games to sort of prove himself. But he's either going to have to take a big pay cut. And why would he at the age of 30 when he could pick up, you know, $55 million and retire at 33?
Yeah,
you know, so the saga
continues, Mark.
Well, it does. Yeah, I mean, listen, it's not looking good for Man United, but you know, the saviour is that they've still got Phil Jones. just when all else failed, we look around.
Phil's here.
Don't worry about it.
He's here till 23.
That was a good deal.
We've made sure we've kept him.
Well done.
$120,000 a week. Not bad, is it?
Oh, darn. It's goodness. Painful. Mark, thanks ever so much.
Thanks,
As always, have a good
Cheers.
Week.
Cheers,
Mark
mate.
Flanagan there, Man United journalist, but not telling us.
Another nice fella,
but not telling us who he supports.
Yes.
Okay. Obviously, I tell everybody I support West Ham. I know we're going to finish in the middle of the table.
Yes.
I don't think we're going to finish any further than that or any lower than that. And I'm proud of it.
Giving your team a voice. Love Sport Radio.
Listen, we've been putting it out there today, 0208 70 20 558, following on from the Australian cricket team have walked on the pitch at Edgbaston with no socks and shoes on, saying it's a superstition and they're going to feel the vibes.
We'll sing a bit of it soon.
We will do. But we'll put it out there, 0208 70 20 558. Tell us the maddest superstitions that you've ever had.
Yeah, and it is our number jingle. Play our number jingle, Dave.
Oh, yeah, we will have to play the number jingle. Now, John, over the last year, when we had another single out...
Gareth. Yes.
You got trolled quite a lot.
I get trolled all the time.
On social media.
On social media, yeah. People don't like the look of me. They get offended. He is so fat. Why is he so fat?
Yeah.
Why? Where is his neck? And all this, this
That's
business.
Harsh, isn't it? Eh?
Well, I suppose it's true.
But you gave him some good...
Yes.
Mean tweets, we've
got. I gave it to him. Mean tweets, we answered them, didn't we?
In fact, if you go online, if you put in mean tweets, Bell and Sperling, I think it comes up somewhere.
It comes up,
On the Sportsman. And you gave it to him back. I think you threatened everybody with Razor Ruddock. You said that...
Well, no, they started to insult him too.
Because Razor was in our video.
Razor was in our video, so they started insulting him.
Yeah.
I said to him, you want to... go knock on his door. Slap his face.
Yeah. But you threatened people with Razor coming round their house.
Razor coming round. Move, I said, didn't I?
Yeah, move.
I said, do yourself a favour and move.
Move houses.
Move houses, because Razor will be round. And you don't want that big lump knocking at your door.
Certainly didn't. But listen, Instagram...
lovely Razor.
Instagram have sort of put this out there now.
Yeah.
If you go to bully somebody, or if you go to make some harsh comment to somebody, something will come up on your screen that will say, are you sure?
Yeah. Okay. So Instagram believes that it's a new anti-bullying tool which prompts users to pause and consider what they are saying. Could help curb abuse on the platform.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Zoe Williams joins us now, communications manager at Kidscape. Zoe, first of all, before we start, have you got any superstitions?
Yeah.
Superstitions?
Yes.
Well, I don't like walking over three drains.
Oh, hang on a second.
Three drains?
Three drains?
Yeah, yeah.
You don't like walking
three
over...
three drains in a row on the street. Don't like walking over them.
It's two okay. Two's okay.
Two's
all right. Two's fine. Three is bad.
See? Three's bad. Four? Four's okay.
Four, I don't know. Never come across that.
You see, you can't get to four, can you?
Yeah.
You can't get to four.
Do you know what, though? It is always three. This is what I said to you about when I see the magpie... I have to say good morning, good morning, good morning. You have to say it three times.
Well, that's ridiculous.
Sorry. Anyway, let's have a little chat about this new situation on Instagram.
It can only be a good thing, right, Zoe? Surely.
Well, it might go some way to curbing low-level bullying behaviour, persuading somebody to just take a moment to just remember that there is someone else at the other end of the message, and do they really want to be saying something horrible to a real person?
Mm.
However, it's not going to go too far to dealing with the real toxic problems. So if somebody is determined to do serious damage, they're not going to be deterred by a simple message going, are you sure you want to post that?
No, of course they're not,
that. Of course they're sure they want to post that.
Do you find that this... I look at some of... let's say some people that we know that have probably got a huge following and... have they got enough time to go through all the comments, you know? Do you see what I'm saying? I mean, last year we had another single out for the World Cup and there was loads of comments and John, you probably only spotted a few of them. Like, what I'm saying is you haven't got enough time to go through all the stuff, have you?
No.
You know?
Yeah.
And do you get to a point where you think, actually, I'm just going to switch off from it? So, but some people with, like, sort of, you know, 500,000 followers and stuff like that, they really haven't got time to go through everything, have they?
Yeah, and to be honest, in a trolling situation, we often recommend, if at all possible, to just log off for a while.
Yeah.
You can ask a friend to help you by reporting any seriously abusive messages, then do that. But taking a break offline for a little while to just kind of regroup and rebuild yourself and make yourself feel better is always going to be a priority.
The thing is about these, like, Love Islanders, for example, Love Island, and celebrities in general, especially in reality TV, they're asking for a lot of it. I don't mean they're asking to be trolled and the nasty comments, but what I'm saying is they should expect it, shouldn't they?
It definitely does seem to be a social problem that has been exacerbated by social media, that has been exacerbated perhaps by the expectation that people are now personally a brand. And that is a problem which has been exacerbated. And on the whole, online negativity, while we often think about it as just something which happens online in a vacuum, it's really, really important to remember that this is a social disease and it is something which is done by people. And so when we do think about solutions for it, a technology solution is never going to be the whole answer. What we need is a much broader change, much broader kind of consideration of kindness and consideration of other people's feelings.
Yeah, I agree.
I find that the people that normally troll people are the most insecure people anyway, because they you know, they're talking about you for a reason. You're in demand, if you like.
Almost jealousy.
Yeah, if you're not that important, they won't send a message because it doesn't really mean anything. Mm-hmm. The only thing I'd say about this is you can just immediately block someone, can't you?
Yes, that's something which can be done and something which we often do recommend doing. And the other new tool Instagram has brought out, so there's the Are You Sure tool, and the other tool that they brought out is a way of blocking someone where they can't see that they've been blocked by you, and they'll just be yelling at you into the ether where no one can see it.
Right, yeah, no, that's good.
And that is certainly going to be probably quite helpful for especially young people who they're the people who they're speaking to on Instagram are people that they know in real life, and there can be consequences, you know, when you see them in school the next day, oh, why'd you block me?
Yes.
So that tool can be quite useful for blocking, but without them knowing.
See, Zoe, the thing is, when I go back to when I was at school, I can remember having a particular bad time with a certain fella who was at school, and you know, it wasn't bullying. It was just, oh no, I've got to go to see him. You know, but when I used to come home from school, kick off my shoes, have me a bit of peanut butter or whatever it was, watch the telly, I didn't have to worry until the next morning. I didn't have to worry about this.
Look at your phone.
I was safe.
Yeah,
but you're not safe anymore, are you?
Yeah, absolutely. And that is an issue with the digital world, because for young people, it is an extension of their real life.
Yes.
So bullying, social problems, friendship trouble that once would have stayed within the school gates can now follow them home.
Yeah.
And it's why, obviously, as part of the package, we do need to really look at children's online lives, young people's online lives, and think about how that is, and also treat online bullying as part of the same issue as offline bullying.
I think, do you know what? I think this is harder for young kids, isn't it? So this is, but the other situation I'd note is that, like my son and my daughter are on Instagram. Kids tend to talk to each other now in a different manner. Everything is shortened. All the sentences are shortened. And if I look at it, some of the comments, I think, that's a bit harsh. Is it? You know, it's almost, you know, they will call it banter. They'll be sort of taking the mickey out of each other. And it is quite harsh, isn't it? And I think if a parent looks at it, especially my wife, she will look at it and go, right, block that kid. Block him. And probably my son actually, well, no, that's just how we talk to each other now these days.
Yeah, absolutely. And there is a very fine line between banter and bullying. And it's important that, you know, everyone understands where it is. And it will be different for some people. So sometimes, you know, making a comment about someone's looks is perfectly fine within the parameters of that friendship. Sometimes that is absolutely crossing a line. And it's something which essentially there does need to be more awareness of, and understanding that when the banter goes too far, that's the point where you stop. And you know, being empowered to say, oh, actually mate, you just crossed the line there, can you not, and respect that.
Yeah, do you know what? There's a point here. I always find that when people retaliate, the person who started it is getting what they want. So you
yeah.
Now I've got them. Now we're into a debate here about who's the ugliest out of me and you.
Yeah.
Okay. And we sort of that's where it.
Well, we often have that argument.
But does this work, right? Mm. Does this work in being honest and going on like I think a bit like what you just said, going on and saying, "Listen, you've really upset me. Like, I think that has really upset me. I don't mean to look like this, mm. or like actually make them feel really bad." Do people do that? Does it work?
Well, the aim isn't so much to make people feel bad, but just communicating that hurt me, and also building a climate where it's okay to talk about those feelings. It's okay to say, actually, do you know what? That hurt my feelings. Can you not? And also the other side of that climate, respecting when somebody says, would you mind not saying that to me anymore, because I'm sensitive about that. Mm. So it's essentially this kind of climate of openness and actually admitting that, yes, do you know what, you have had hurt feelings, and respecting that and not doing it again.
Do you know what, I've just thought about one actually, John.
Yes.
About confronting these people, and this did actually work for us, Zoe, by the way. We had a few hit records a few years ago about sort of Sven-Göran Eriksson and Golden Balls himself. And I remember sort of somebody putting some comments on the YouTube videos going, what a joke this song is. What a disgusting,
blah, blah, blah.
And really slated it. And he wasn't the last person he was expecting was me to reply to him. I actually replied and said, well, sorry about that, mate. It weren't to everyone's taste, but hopefully you like the other single that we had out.
I remember
and
that.
He couldn't believe it. He actually replied and went, oh, mate, yeah, your second single was fantastic. I remember seeing you on Top of the Pops, and it was incredible. He must have thought, oh, I didn't realise he was going to reply to me personally. And then suddenly he wants to be your friend, if
absolutely.
You like.
Absolutely. Zoe, listen, we've got to go to a break now, but I hope this deters a few bullies. I really do, because I think it's an awful thing, bullying. Good on Instagram for doing it. Zoe Williams there, communications manager of Kidscape. It's a terrible thing, Belle.
Belle and Sterling on Love Sport Radio.
Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.